Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're going to talk cars, if it's okay with you, for the next 2 hours. It's easy to get on here with a car question or car problem. First of all, you call first, and because in the last 20, 25 minutes, we're stacked up something fierce, so everybody waits until the last. But 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and you give us a call, and give us the year, make, and model of your car, how many miles, and then let's talk about the symptoms or the problem. It really doesn't make any difference. It's not relative to the conversation what the guy on YouTube said from Oklahoma City. Let's talk about that, and I'll give you the very best advice I can give you. But I have what most people don't have, and I have the information you're providing to us with respect to year, make, model, mileage, engine, stuff like that. Second of all, I got 39 years of working on cars. And I'm a master tech, an ASC master certified tech, so it makes a big difference. But let me tell you about a good repair shop here in town, especially for you diesel guys. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is an A-plus shop, according to the Better Business Bureau. He's staffed by some of the best diesel techs in the business. They're going to give you good service. They're going to get the job done right the first time, although, like all of us, every once in a while, we mess up. Strictly Diesel works on foreign and domestic light diesel trucks, and that kind of draws a line there. They're not working on the big semis. They're just south of I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, and their website is open 24 hours a day where you can look at parts, exhaust systems, you know, all kinds of stuff that would make your diesel pretty or perhaps make the fuel economy a little better. Wink, wink. So that's Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. You know, when it comes to being a customer, I'm going to tell you from my point of view and from many of our points of view, us shop owners, there are certain things that you do and don't do, certain things that you should do and you should not do. I got a call from a shop owner last week. He says, you never talk about customers. And I said, okay, tell me what I need to talk about. He says, the guy comes in, guy or lady, they've never been in before, and they have a problem. They've had it to three or four other shops. Every one of those shops took advantage of the customer. None of those shops fixed the customer's problem, and they are adamant that we're the ones that can take care of it. And I said, that happens every day of your life and my life, or at least three times a week. He says, yeah, I know. But he says, we don't want to work on their cars. And he says, because we don't think we're going to make them happy because two, three, four other shops couldn't make them happy. And I said, I understand. I have what you don't have, and I've had an opportunity to talk to those guys that have been in the gas station business since the 50s and 60s. I started working at a gas station in 1968. My boss, Ken Vivian, who has passed on to the area north of the clouds, his customer service skills weren't the best by any stretch of the imagination. But he did have some certain ways of getting past the problem areas. And I remember this, and as a matter of fact, I practice it. So the customer comes in. He's been everywhere in town. Nobody can fix it. All of them are ripoffs. He heard we could do a good job. So I ask him, is this symptom intermittent or can you show it every time? And 9 times out of 10, it's intermittent. Then the next question is, have you taken anybody for a ride and showed them the symptom? Or can you make the symptom happen? No. Okay. Now, the customer tells us that they spent a lot of money. And they tell us that for two reasons. Number one, because they have spent a lot of money. And number two is because they want us to know that, you know, if we can fix it and help them out, then that's better for them. So Ken would listen to this. Now, keep in mind, this is 1968, 1970, when gas was, you know, 37, 39, and 41. And actually, it was even cheaper than that. So Ken would say, well, you know, let me look at it for a minute. And he'd open up the hood and he'd pretend like he was listening and talking to the motor and stuff. And in today's world, I'll kind of convert it to today's world. You say, you know, the diagnostic fee, you've got three different problems, and the diagnostic fee could easily be $250 to $300 a problem. So you could have $1,000 tied up in this in just diagnostic fees. Now, there's a possibility that we're going to find it and fix it. So the diagnostic fee leads us to the bad connection and we fix it. So there's no additional charges. Well, at this particular point, the customer would look at Ken and say, "You're crazy. I'm not paying that kind of price." He says, "Well, I'm sorry. That's the kind of the structure we have." "Well, I want to talk to the boss." "Well, I am the boss. It's my name on the door up above." So I used to laugh at that because it wasn't a confrontational kind of "see you later," but it accomplished its goal. And I said to him, I remember I was 16 years old. I said, "They're just going to badmouth you." And he goes, "Yeah, but they're going to complain that I'm expensive." Not that I couldn't fix their car. Not that I, you know, could fix it without working on it or without diagnosing it. But he says, "They're just going to say I'm expensive. They're not going to say I'm a jerk. I didn't yell at him. I didn't scream at him." He says, "But they're not going to say that. They're just going to say, 'Oh, you have to be careful at Jones over there. He's really expensive.'" Well, I said to Ken, "Well, how does that accommodate you? How does that make it better for you?" And he goes, "You got to know that those people that have these never-ending problems that nobody can fix have told all their neighbors, all their friends, all their family. So I'm not the only one that knows that no one's been able to please this person. Now, they could have a really big problem that is intermittent, and you've heard me say 100 times, you just have to wait till it gets worse and easier to find. There's no other way around it. It's kind of like me saying my roof leaks and asking you to come and tell me where the roof leaks and it's not raining or I haven't crawled in the attic. So, you know, you can't find what you... Let me change that. You can't fix what you can't find. And no matter who we think we are, that's not something that's going to happen. So be careful about that. There's other things that are things you don't want to do, and I've got a caller, so I'm going to get to that in just a second, is you don't want to walk into a shop that you're a first-time customer and give us a story about why you should be moved to the front of the line. Because unless our bays are empty, that's not going to happen. Most of us have already committed to other customers, and they could be first-time customers, or they could be customers that have been with us for 30 years. But to walk into a shop and then start the conversation off, or within the first 3 or 4 minutes, is that you need to be moved to the front of the line, and you're not going to say it that way, but that's going to be the way we take it. That's a bad deal. That's a bad deal. You're not going to get lots of cooperation, because most of us aren't going to let you move to the front of the line and turn around and make one of our old customers mad. All right, Gil, who have we got?
Well, we had a caller, but he dropped, so continue your story.
Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Those are the kinds of things. Now, customers that are really, that will bend over backwards for, that will part the seas for, we have a lady named Kay that's been with us since 1979. Now, we didn't even have computers back then, but I know. She started in 1979. That was the first year we had a mobile station in Ahwatukee. We were the second business to open in Ahwatukee, as a matter of fact. And so she was just a really kind lady. She was a single mother. She had a son. And she was just really kind. And I remember one time we really messed up. And she was so gracious. And one of the things she said is, "I know you didn't do this on purpose." And that just meant the world to me. Now, once my wife and I, back then the kids weren't involved, but my wife and I understood that and heard that, then we moved heaven and earth for her. We just did. Whatever she wanted, we would do everything we could to accommodate her goal. She was one of the few people that we ever extended credit to. And, of course, I didn't think I needed to say, if you don't keep your word to me, this will be the last time I ever extend you credit. We don't do that now. She did just exactly what I asked her. And I said, "You make up the terms, but I'm going to hold them to you." This is back in 1979. And she did. So not too long ago, she came in and we did some work and stuff. And my daughter said, "Kay so-and-so said that she had been doing business with you since the late 70s. And I said, "Well, give me your last name." And she did. And I go, "Yeah, that's true." And she says, "There's like an A with 10 pluses after it in the notes in her customer file." And I said, "Yeah, because your mom and I have been dealing with Kate since, you know, the very beginning of our car repair life. So I've got a lot of those. And also, I'm proud to say that I have sometimes two and sometimes three generations of the same family. That's kind of cool because you got grandpa and then you got dad and then you got dad's son. So it's kind of nifty that we have that. There's a lot of shops that have that. Blackwell up in North Phoenix, 25th Street Auto, Martin's repair shop. I mean, I'm kind of at a blank right now because I've got a lot of shops. Thompson's over in Mesa. I'm kind of thinking as we fly along here. These people came from second generation car repair people. They've been around a long time. So a lot of the stuff that I'm talking about right now, I can guarantee you that they're shaking their heads going, yeah. Now, not all of us agree about everything. But I think we do agree that the most important part of our relationship is being able to identify the symptom, being able to drive it and feel it. And it's your right as a customer for you to say, I'm not going to come in on, I would like to avoid Mondays and Fridays because I know you're really busy, but I want to come in and I can make it happen. But nobody else can make it happen, but I can make it happen. The noise, the squeak, the vibration, the window won't roll up and down. I can make it happen. Will you assign a tech to me? And I promise not to have the tech for an hour. and that's the whole program. So the shop, I can virtually guarantee you the shop says no problem. Wednesday's fine. Wednesday or Thursday's fine. Let's make it after the morning rush. So we open at 7:30 and let's make it after 8:30. So we've got the morning rush and the waiters on the oil changes and stuff. Okay, perfect. And then you show up 15 minutes early and announce who you are and said, this is what I was promised by so-and-so. And then everything is, and normally everybody puts it in the appointment calendar anyway. So there's a good relationship there should be between you and your repair shop. If not, I think you understand that it's either your fault or their fault. And if it's their fault, you need to move on. So it's one or the other. 602-508-0960. If you have a car problem, you have a symptom, your car window doesn't roll up and down, give me your make and model. Let's talk about the mileage and then just discuss the problem or the symptoms. That helps me out the best. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you real quick about Action Auto at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom and I have been friends since 1983. He opened his shop in 1983. Whatever your car repair needs, if you're near I-17 in Deer Valley and you don't already have a garage that you really love, then may I suggest you stop by Action Auto Repair. He's on the northwest corner of I-17, at I-17 in Deer Valley. So Action Auto Repair, ASE Master Certified Technicians, they know what they're doing, and they're going to treat you right. Okay, let's go to the phones because we've got some callers. Daryl, you're up first. Hello, Daryl? Daryl?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I probably didn't have the right button pushed. How can I help you?
Is this Mark?
Yes, sir.
Hi, Mark. Yeah, so I've got a 2005 Infiniti FX35. It has 142,000 miles on it. I'm getting some on startup, some lifter noise. It's somewhat intermittent, but goes away after it warms up. Is that something that can be cleaned, or is it a worn out thing? What do you think?
Well, certainly, I want to tell you that an exhaust leak and a lifter noise sound the same. And I would have a tough time determining the two of them. However, both of them will go away when the motor gets a little warm. Am I right about your lifter clatter?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. So what we typically do on those cars is we introduced a bunch of white smoke in the morning, after nobody started it, up the tailpipe. And we look at the exhaust manifolds on both sides. And if we got white smoke coming out, then it's an exhaust leak. On the lifter noise, there's nothing to do on it. It's except this. You're going to have to pull the valve cover off and put your hands on the lifters cold in the morning to feel which one it is. And literally, we put our fingers right on the rocker assembly. Now, we might see something in there. We might put a straight edge across all the studs, and we find one stud that was higher than the rest. So it's pulled the stud out of the head, and it's created a little slop. We pull the stud out, put some JB weld, or we thread it. We put it back in, put the rocker back in, adjust it, and we're done. So it's probably okay. something you need to have done, but it's kind of a twofold. Let's do a valve cover, and let's do the lifter at the same time. The valve, okay. valve cover gasket, I should say. So do you have somebody you like?
Not really, no.
Okay, what part of town are you in?
I'm up by Cave Creek.
Okay, I'd go to Blackwell, 40th Street in Glendale, and just tell Tom that Mark Salem said you were a good guy on Mondays and Thursdays, and that's why I'm coming in, or I've called for an appointment on Mondays or Thursday, because the rest of the time he says you're just flat-out crazy. And and he'll know I sent you, but I don't get any money out of that, I promise you. I just kind of opened the door.
No worries.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Keith, you're up next. Keith, how can I help you?
Good morning. Hey, right before your break, I'm the customer that you were just talking about. I've got a 2006 Dodge Dakota, 138,000 miles with a 4.7 liter engine. Within the first year we've owned this thing, it would overheat when we're going up hills if we have a bunch of camping gear in the back, that kind of thing. But now, just any time we're sitting in traffic, it starts to overheat. And I've had it into two different shops.
Okay.
And they can't find anything, so it won't do it when it sits there.
Okay, I understand. You got a gauge, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Has it ever spit coolant on the ground?
No.
Okay, and when you say, I want you to divide the gauges into a quarter, half, and three-quarter. The worst-case scenario, where's the needle on the gauge?
Normal running, it's just below half, and then whenever it decides to overheat, it just, within a matter of, 2 minutes, it's noticeable. Every mile, you're seeing it go up, up, up.
Okay, but I know, but what's the highest that needle gets when it's going up, up, up?
It'll spike to the top.
To the red zone?
Yes, to the extreme top of the red zone.
Okay. And you're still not spitting any coolant?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, I'll pull over and stop or sit in the shade and shut it off.
Okay, does it spit any coolant then?
No.
Okay, all right. If you want to check this yourself, I'll tell you how to do it. It's really simple.
Sure.
I need you to go to Harbor Freight and buy a temperature gun.
Okay.
And it's a gun, you pull the trigger, and it's got a little red light on it, a little laser on it. And so I want you to get used to gunning the top hose on a regular basis. Now, the water comes out of the motor through the top hose. Then it goes to the radiator, drops its heat off, and the bottom hose is substantially different in temperature because we dropped a bunch of the train from the upper hose dropped a bunch of heat off in the radiator. And then I want you to pay attention to what that top hose is at. What temperature do you see? I am not concerned with 240 or less. Okay? Not concerned.
Okay.
Number two, I want you to determine is speed related? Forget the load part. Is speed related? Is there a difference driving around town where the gauge is at? And then, of course, let's turn the air on to make sure we're in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want you to get on the freeway when you're doing 70 miles an hour. I want to know what difference is there, if there's a difference.
It's usually traffic. It's almost always when you start getting in traffic.
Okay. And when you get into traffic, you see the needle start to rise. Wherever it ends up, it starts to rise. Okay.
Correct.
Now, think about this. While we're doing 70 miles an hour, we're pushing air across the radiator, right?
Yes.
So we don't need any fans. We just need air. And so no matter what kind of electric fans you have or clutch fans or mechanical fans or belt-driven fans, none of that makes any difference because when you're traveling, we usually kick the fan out because we got more than enough air across the radiator. Now, does that mean that when you get on the freeway after you've been on traffic, that it'll drop a little bit?
Yes.
Okay.
It'll start going down a little bit.
Okay, now, see the difference there? When we're going through the city or when we're changing from slow speeds to high speeds, we're seeing a difference. And so if it's low speed, you said low speed, you see the needle come up. And then when you get on the freeway, it cools a little bit?
Yes.
Okay. I would think, here's my educated guess. My educated guess is the radiator's plugged up. And my educated guess would be, I'd want to check the operations of the fans, whatever you have, mechanical or electrical. But you can also do that. Now, I also want you to do this. Do you know if you have electrical fans and have you ever heard them come on?
I don't know what an electrical fan is, but I did have the fan clutch replaced, if that's what you're thinking. Okay. I don't know that much about it.
Okay, well, the fan clutch is a mechanical fan, and the fan clutch around city is supposed to draw lots of air because we're not moving through the air fast enough. So that it's like a propeller. It sucks air through the radiator. That's your fan clutch. Now, when we get on the highway, the fan clutch disengages, and the air at 70 miles an hour pushes through the radiator. But first, I'm really concerned that it isn't spitting anything on the ground. I'm really concerned about that. So I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying if this thing was really in the red zone, it ought to be spitting coolant because we've overcome the pressure cap. So if it gets that hot, right. That fluid's expanding, we got to move it somewhere. And you didn't say anything about when you start it up in the morning, it runs poorly for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden it magically, you know, cleans up. That means I'm going to eliminate head gaskets. So we got a water pump.
It does run high RPMs as soon as you start it, and it never used to do that like in the beginning. So you start it up, it'll be, you know, 1,800 RPM, 1,600 for good 4, 5, 6 minutes, and then it'll drop down to about 900.
Okay. I'm not concerned about that. That's okay. Not going to be what we're talking about. But when we come back, I got a couple other ideas, and Mike and Randy, you stay right there, and I'm going to get to you next and next. And then I'm just going to finish up with Keith real quick. I'm going to think of a couple more questions. We'll be back in a minute. Well, it's 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and I'm going to get just to, I promise, Mike dropped off, but Randy and Debbie are my next two callers. I'm going to take about 10 seconds to tell you about Auto Dynamics, at Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. Family-owned and operated since 1982. Again, quality service. They're nice. They talk about symptoms. Their estimates are nice and clean. You're going to come underneath it, so you don't have to worry about that. Plus, it's unusual in our industry, but they don't pay their technicians any commission on the parts or labor. So, therefore, they can ensure that no one's going to sell you unnecessary parts and repairs. So, they're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue, Auto Dynamics. Let me finish up with Keith real quick. Keith, if the radiator's plugged up, I want you to think of two things. A straw of, you know, the upper radiator hose, or the upper radiator hose is the size of a coffee can. If we squirt, you know, radiator fluid through a straw, it's going to move through the radiator so fast, it's not going to have time to drop its heat off. So if you overheated more on a highway, certainly a plugged up radiator, call it a restricted radiator, would be the thing. You can take your temperature gun and you can gun the radiator. And if you find places that are hotter and places that are colder, that's a good sign that the radiator's plugged up, because there's some of it that's plugged and some of it that's flowing. Now, the fan, if the absence of fan, it would overheat city, but not highway, because you're moving through the air real fast. This isn't a thermostat problem. But if you're up to 3/4 and you play around 3/4, that's normal. 1/2 to 3/4 is everything since the early 2000s. So we get the idea that we want to run below the half, but in reality, every car today, including diesels, should run between 1/2 and 3/4 on their gauge. So that temperature gun will help you out. Just watch that upper radiator hose. That's the one I want you to watch, okay?
All right, sir. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Randy, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Good morning. Hey, thanks. I really enjoy your show. I picked up all kinds of cool pointers from you. And quick little background. I've been an aircraft maintainer for like 40-some years, but some of these later model vehicles on the road, you know, you've got it's almost impossible for a guy that likes to do his own maintenance work on just because of all the computers. So here's the issue. I've got a 2004 Toyota Tundra, high mileage, 300,000+ on it. And the last 6 months, I've been having an intermittent problem with the fuel indication system on it. You know, I'll fill the tank up, I'll get out the next morning, and you know, as I'm driving out of the subdivision, I say, oh man, somebody siphoned my fuel off because I'm down to about 1/4 tank. And then gradually it starts to come back up and it gets a normal indication. I can't duplicate it. It happens about once every 6 or 8 weeks. Sometimes it's in the morning, sometimes it's in the afternoon.
Okay, let me, as an aircraft guy, you can imagine that the sender is a piano key, And then we've got this little rod that runs up and down the piano keys, and that's what the sender looks like in your tank. Have you replaced the fuel pump yet in the tank on this?
No, I haven't replaced any components yet because I don't want to throw money at a problem that I'm having a hard time diagnosing. Should I get it to a shop? Would they be able to put it on the computer?
This is a manual thing, Randy. This is a manual thing. You know, you're going to go down underneath there. But let's stop for a minute here. If you ever replace the fuel pump, they're going to replace the sender anyway. But for the sender, I want you to go buy a bottle of Tecron. Put it in your tank. Sometimes that'll clean up the piano keys. See, that's what you got a problem. You got a contact that swings up and down on piano keys. Either the contact's worn and I've lost its tension, or the piano keys have all kinds of slime and boogers all over them. So I'm going to try to clean that out first. The second thing would simply be you're going to go underneath the car. You're going to find out that the blue wire is the one that talks to the gauge. You're going to cut the blue wire. Somebody's going to be sitting in the car. You're going to turn the key on, and then I'm going to say, okay, where you at? I got the wire cut, by the way. And he goes, I'm full. And I say, okay. Watch it. And then I ground the wire, and he goes, oh, I'm empty. Well, that means the gauge is okay. and so the only thing that's left is the piano keys inside the tank. So I'm really surprised you haven't done a fuel pump on this, but try the Tecron. I'd say 50% of the time or slightly more, that'll clean up the piano keys.
Okay, so, perfect.
All righty.
Thanks a lot.
All right, you betcha, Randy. Debbie, good morning. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. I have a question. Can you recommend an auto dent shop up in my area? I have a small little dent. The paint's fully intact and all, but it just needs to, like, get popped out or something. But I don't know where to take it. Can you give me some recommendations?
Yeah, I want you to call Phoenix Body Works and ask them who they use for, and ask for Heather. Phoenix Body Works, ask for Heather. Because Heather runs the joint, even though she doesn't own it. Heather is the big cheese there, and everybody answers to Heather. But you're going to say, Heather, Mark Salem said that I should call you and ask you, who does your paintless dent repair? Now, everybody knows a good paintless dent repair guy. And so I'm quite sure Heather's going to give you the name of somebody that they use, and that's the one you should use. Now, you can also call Kurtz at I-17 and Bell, or you can call Action at Deer Valley and I-17, and you can call all three of them and just say, who do you use for dentless repair? Now, you can also call my daughter, Andy, and if you got a pencil handy, you're going to call 480-598-1234, and you're going to say, Andy, your dad said that you'll give me the name of the dent repair. Now, we're in Tempe. However, they travel all over. So we have a paintless dent repair. It's just amazing how those guys do this. They're like chiropractors for cars.
Okay.
And they punch a little hole, and then they put a rubber plug in it so nobody knows it. And this is in the door jamb, and then they put these long tools in there, and they do this, and they do that. They're not pounding on anything. It's like they're massaging the dent. And then they look with a fluorescent light, and then they wave a dead chicken around their head. Then they cock-a-doodle-doo, and they do. But they do the most amazing, good ones, do the most amazing work you've ever seen. So, and now, the paint, you made a point. You said the paint isn't damaged, right?
Right.
Okay, you are exactly what they would want. So if you can call all of those, and I think you'll probably find the name is you'll find one that more than one shop, recommends. But there's, and you don't want anybody that just started day before yesterday in this business. You want some gray-haired guy or somebody who, or a gray-haired woman. You want somebody who's been in this business the last 2 or 3 years, and you go ahead and query, you know, if, for instance, Salem's Dent Repair reviews, and look and see what they've got. You're looking for somebody that can please 90% of their customers, okay?
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You betcha. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. But 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open, so if you want to jump in, Gil will whisper in my ear, or he'll give me a sound that says, there's someone waiting. In addition to that, I'm only as good as guessing as the information you give me. So if I ask you a question, there are three answers. Yes, no, or I don't know. Those are the three. I've spent a long time helping people understand what they can do to help somebody fix their car. I tell them what to say and what not to say. I say to you, when they give you an estimate, is that how much I can write my check for before I leave home? And then if they say, well, no, not really, because I don't have shop supplies, environmental charges, sales tax, and core charges. That sales tax is about 10%. Shop supplies and environmental charges are 5 to 10%. So that's a $15 to $20% swing on your bill. So you insist to give me a final. They can do it. Every one of us works off of a computer. There is no problem in asking that. You also ask, and this all goes for my shop too, and every one of the shops on my Best Car Repair Shops list that you can find at MarkSalem.com. MarkSalem.com. You can find a list of everybody I really know real well. They have their insurance in order. They've been around a long time. They have a great history, all that kind of stuff. So you can also ask for your old parts back. Now, you're not going to ask for your old oil filter or your old fuel filter back, but you always ask for your old parts back. And you do it this way. You know, my dad is one of these old engineers, and he likes to analyze what goes wrong with his parts. So would you put the part in the box and put it on the passenger's high floor, put some plastic or something underneath it, and my dad wants to look at it. Or come up with any excuse you want. My husband, blah, 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 blah. Or my son's an auto mechanic, and he says he wants to see the part. Whatever. But you got it, and here's why. Within 2 or 3 days, you recognized that you still have exactly the same symptoms. And they replaced the mass airflow sensor. They replaced the coolant sensor. They replaced the crankshaft sensor, the camshaft sensor, whatever. So you're going to go back in, and you're going to be nice, and you're going to say, I'm sorry, but here's my work order. And I had described this intermittent stalling, and just for no reason the engine would die, and I'd pull off the side of the road and have to crank it for a while. And you said that the crankshaft sensor was bad, and frankly, I still have exactly the same symptoms. So I have the part in my car, and I was wondering if we can put that part back and if we can move forward from here. Because clearly I didn't need the part because that didn't fix it. Now, you're going to find out what the shop's like when you say that. And that's the reason I give all my customers their old parts back. Every single one of them, unless the part stinks or leaks oil, or it's obvious what we're going to get back. Air filters and spark plugs and wires and, you know, a water pump if they want the water pump carcass or whatever. Most of the time we take a picture of the water pump and say, here, look, it's leaking right here. You can see it as clear as day. And so do other shops. So I'm copying a lot of the good things that other shops do. Mark Salem is not the generator of all this stuff. Mark Salem's a good guy to ask questions of other shop owners and see if they do it better than I do. And so I'm kind of a central point for all of this kind of stuff. You always pay with a credit card, and that way you can dispute the charge. If they say to you it's a crankshaft sensor, you must be drinking, get out of here, then you can stop payment on it. Now you go get it fixed, then you send this ticket. This is what they charged me, and this is the ticket where they fixed it, and you're sending it to American Express, MasterCharge, Visa, Discover. Now, let me tell you, at my shop and many other shops, north of 90% of our transactions are over the credit card machine. None of us are big enough, tough enough, or stupid enough to tell MasterCharge, Visa, Discover, American Express to go pound sand. We can't do that. So they're going to say you got a dispute and do, and you talk to them and whatever. There's been times I didn't know the customer was mad and they disputed the charge. I don't have a choice. Like I said, I can't tell four credit card companies, see you later. That's too much of my business. When you talk about credit cards, too, it's important to know that they're charging us between 1 and 3 points. 1 to 3 points percentage. So I have to make that up somewhere. But here's the real fun of it. Your rewards cards are all tied to the fees that I'm paying. So when you get 1% cash back or 2% cash back or 3% cash back, that's my money. Now, they'll give you 5%, and that's some of their money. because rarely are any of us over 3%. But the bigger our volume is, the less we can get down. I talked to a guy the other day that's bigger than I am, and he's like 1.5. So he's got a 50% reduction on credit card fees than I do. So these are kind of some of the business reasons that things happen. We get charged more for your rewards card. If we're at 2%, we might pay 2.5% for your rewards card. So when we swipe it through our machine, it tells us right then, is there a premium attached to this card? And if so, Mark, you're going to pay more money. Okay, we got somebody on the phone. Gil.
That would be Randy.
Randy, good morning to you. How can I help you?
I just talked to you a minute ago, and then I heard you say that you were kind of slow on the caller front today, so I had another question.
Okay.
If 2004 Toyota Tundra, same vehicle we just spoke about, now that I've moved to the desert, I've noticed that, you know, when the temperatures get hot, my air conditioning system seems to falter, especially when I'm idling. The vehicle does not have the electric fans on the radiator for airflow. My question is, and it seems to be RPM related, if I sit there and keep the RPM up at about 1400, 1500 RPM, it does tend to cool down a little bit. And I'm thinking in my head, well, maybe I'm pulling more air through the radiator system, with the higher RPM. Is there something else, or like an auxiliary fan or something that I could put on to improve the cooling when I'm sitting there at idle?
That's a loser idea. There's lots of shops that will put an electric fan on there for you. And they're going to say, okay, well, this will solve your problem. It probably will, but it's cheaper just to solve the problem. When your gauge moves, it moves from where to where between cruising down the road and this hot idle.
Oh, well, the temperature gauge stays pretty stable. It's just I noticed that the air conditioning system it just starts blowing warm air out.
I'm sorry. I misunderstood you, and I apologize. Let me tell you the changes. Your Fred Flintstone car was born 16 years ago.
It was.
And during that period of time, it was a huge joke that we, my industry, knew how much Freon you needed. It was just a joke. We were supposed to take the ambient temperature, put a fan in front of it, and the fan had to blow 20 miles an hour. Then you had to wave a dead chicken around your head, and then you had to slap your hip, and you had to do all this fun stuff. And then you looked at the sight glass, and when the bubbles disappeared, you were full. All of that today we know is a lie. We know today is all a lie. Then you looked at the chart for the ambient temperature versus the cold temperature, blah, blah, blah. You better be 55 or below on your center vent. We have a machine now, and I have two of them, but everybody has one of these machines. We hook up the machine, we push a button. The machine sucks out all your Freon. It runs it through filters and takes air and water. And then it says, Mark, I got 20 ounces here. And I look at the sticker, and the sticker says you have 28 ounces. So I put your 20 back in, and I add 8. And I want to tell you, we have been 100% successful every time we've done that in fixing all kinds of temperature-related air conditioning problems. 100%.
Gotcha.
Now, this is assuming the compressor is in good shape and all the blend doors are working right and the heater control valve is shutting off the heater. But I can't tell you. My famous story is the guy came in and said, nobody can fix this. And I said, I can fix it. So we fixed it. And I think it was $145. It's $125 to do it. And then I charge you for any extra Freon. But I'm giving you back your 20 ounces. So at the end of the day, he says, you know, everybody else said they can fix it. I said, where are you going? He says, I'm going to Tucson. I said, I tell you what, just go on to Tucson. If I didn't fix it, you're going to have to drive through city. Then just pass me by. Just keep going on the freeway. And if you don't pay this by tonight at 6, I'll know I didn't do anything. He wasn't gone 10 minutes and he called and he goes, here's my credit card.
1 minute.
He wasn't there 10 minutes. So, yes, the answer is that's what we need to do first. And I want to tell you, a third of them come in overcharged. So that's the guy that goes to the auto parts store and gets a 12-ounce can, 16-ounce can, and stuffs it in there thinking that's going to fix it. But how long has it been since you last serviced that?
Oh, gosh, it's at least 2 years, maybe three.
Okay, I'm 95% sure that a suck, clean, a reinstall, and top it off will take care of your problem. I'm 95% sure. But anyway, I got to run, Randy. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. One more time, the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. Now, Gil's sweating bullets right now because I'm 10 seconds from giving him back this show. But I'm going to just bring it right up to the top of the hour because he's scared that my clock isn't working, but it really is.
This was a paid program and was provided for...
I was sweating.
I know you weren't.
Well, I got a lot of fans on, so it's okay. You didn't see me sweat.
Okay. Oh, God.
That was actually a very productive and good hour.
It was. We got one, two. I'm going to count Randy twice. Three, four, five. So we're all right. We're good. And then second hour.
Mike, who dropped, who called.
Yeah, yeah. It's no big deal. We take what they give us. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. You have to pardon me for whatever reason. I get these, it must be allergies or something. Behind the scenes, it's important to understand that when you're in radio, they want you out, for instance, at the top of the hour, 58:50. They don't want 58:48. They don't want 58:58. They want your last word out of your mouth at 58:50. So sometimes I aggravate the engineer by pretending I'm going to go way past it, and then I hit the mark. And that's what happened because Gil was talking to my ears, and he goes, 58:50 is coming up.
I watch every second, man.
And he watches me every second. Now, there's two breaks here at the 20. Let me hold on just a minute. Hold on. Don't look. At the 17 and the 40, I can be flexible. But the 30 at the bottom of the hour and 58:50, got to hit it. Okay, let me talk real quick about a great repair shop, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. It's the only shop in Mesa that I will say you should go to. It's not that there isn't any good shops in Mesa, but Thompson's is the best, in my opinion. Brian and Thelma have been around a long time. Their families have been involved, both of their families have been involved in car repair since the 60s. So Thompson's is on Main Street, just east of Stapley. Brian and Thelma run it. They're really good at what they do. And all you have to do is meet Brian or Thelma, and you will quickly understand how much I think of those two because of the way they run their business. All righty, let's go to the phones. And Greg, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I've got one problem, two questions. We just bought an 18-foot toy hauler, and we're towing it with a 2008 Suburban. And it's within the weight and tongue weight specs for the Suburban, but it's sagging. I've got coil springs in the back. What do you recommend? And that's with the trailer empty. So it's sagging probably, I don't know, 3 inches or so. What do you recommend for the suspension on that and towing that trailer?
Well, you got a couple of different choices. First of all, let me explain something to you. You need to measure from the ground to a particular part of the bumper. And usually what I do is I just take a black magic marker and scratch the bumper. I'll put a piece of tape there, whatever. That's your ride height. And so when you put the trailer on there, you measure it again and you say, okay, I'm 3 inches lower. Two things. Call Dunbar Leaf and Spring. Dunbar Leaf and Spring.
Dunbar.
He's been around since Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble. They're really good at what they do. And you're going to go talk to them and say, can you toughen up my rear end so that I can put tongue weight on there and I don't drop 3 inches? And I want you to, you know, make sure that that's what I'm trying to accomplish. Now, you're going to drop an inch or so. You're going to drop an inch no matter what. Otherwise, you're going to sacrifice some terrible ride. Now, the second thing you can do is airbags. And with airbags, you can do them with or without a compressor. With the compressor on airbags is a little bit pricey, but it also gives you a knob where you can adjust. So you can do airbags on that. They're usually going to go inside the coil springs, and you can raise those up. But after you haul that trailer a couple times, you'll know that you need to put 20 pounds or 40 pounds or 100 pounds in the bags in order to leave the trailer flat. Whatever you do, take the measurement off the rear bumper and make sure that at the end of the day, with the trailer on there, you're at that number. And that'll make it tow good. The headlights won't be up in the air of your Suburban. The trailer won't be nose down and pushing you through a red light when you don't want to do it. So that's what I would do. Airbags or talk to Dunbar. And if I were you, I'd talk to Dunbar first.
And Mark, what's your opinion about these equalizer hitches, the weight distribution hitches?
Well, they're kind of neat. It's a
start with the brake or with the springs.
Well, does your 18 foot have the equalizer hitch or not?
I was recommended one.
Okay.
So I haven't purchased it, but I was recommended to start there.
I like equalizer hitches because what we're doing is we're hooking the trailer and then we're using these chains and these bars and we're using this big handle, and what we're doing is we're jacking that connection where we lift it up. Now that's pretty expensive in and of itself, because you need not only the hitch part but you need the bar part, so you got infrastructure on the truck side and on the trailer side, and your wife's never going to be able to load those bars unless, of course, she's
right.
I mean, there's going to be some women that can do it, but my wife isn't going to be able to do it. I think I'd price all three of them. And I would probably go to U-Haul and ask them about a weight distribution hitch, but I'd price all three of them. Decide, because all three of them will work.
Right. Okay.
Okay? All right. Okay. Thank you, Greg. That's a question I've never had before. But, yeah, there's lots of adaptations that you can do. But I remember a lady brought her Escalade in, and she tows a trailer. And she was having all kinds of problems, and the thing would fishtail and this and that and the other. So I took her down to Love's, and we weighed the front axle of the truck. Then we weighed the Escalade, then the back axle, and then we did the trailer by itself, and we did the truck and the trailer together. And we found that the vehicle and the trailer were well within the gross combined weight of the vehicle. So the vehicle loaded up, and the trailer loaded up was underneath the number it should have been. But we also figured out that we had done this before we even left, that the tongue needed to come up on the trailer. So she had a waist distribution bar, but she didn't adjust it properly. And so we put a tape measure against the top of, you know, the black band around the rear bumper of some cars? Well, from the top of the black band to the ground, let's pretend it was 20 inches. Well, we needed it up higher. We needed it up to 23. So with her rate distribution hitch, we moved the chains and adapted it to where when she loaded it, bingo, she got that 3 inches back. So the bottom line is the back of the bumper is where we work, but there's a variety of ways to get the back of the bumper back up to the 20 inches it should have been. So that's kind of how it works. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have any questions about cars and trailers and motorhomes and all that kind of stuff, I'll tell you a thing I learned from some old guy. Those of you with motorhomes, and I'm sure some of you have heard this, when you're on your way home, you have a black water tank and a gray water tank, and I don't need to explain which one they are. So when you get home, you got to dump the black first, and then you use the gray soapy water from the kitchen and the bathroom sinks to rinse out the hoses and get everything smelling good. So this old guy said, when you're about 100 miles from home or even longer, stop and buy two or three bags of ice. Flush them down the toilet. And he says, and that as you drive, that ice will clean up the inside. And he says, put a little bit of Joy liquid in it. But he didn't define little bit. So we stopped. We had a Bounder motorhome. And we stopped at the Circle K. We're about 200 miles away. Buy three bags of ice. Flush them down the toilet. And we're driving in as I hit the brake and accelerate and hit the brake. And I'm rocking it. We can actually hear the ice. So we're all proud. And I had put, you know, I held the bottle of detergent. And I went, psst. And I thought, that was good. So we're driving home, and as with your house and everywhere else, we have to have a vent tube from those tanks. So people are passing me, and they're pointing up to the roof, and I don't know, maybe the air conditioning cover blew off. So I pull off to the side of the road, and this guy did too, and he goes, that pipe up on top is just blowing all kinds of soap suds out, and he says they have a kind of a brown tint to them. I had put so much soap in the tank, and the agitation caused soap, the foam, and the foam was going up the vent to the roof, which is where you're supposed to vent that tank, and I was chugging down the road blowing bubbles out of the motorhome. So I learned real quick that you just go, psst, and that's about it. So 10, 15, 20, 30 seconds of Joy Liquid is not going to work. You're going to be embarrassed. And so I had to drive home real slow because I didn't want to be blowing foam all over the place. All right, we got a caller. Let's go to the caller.
That would be Bob.
Bob, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I want to have a custom seat installed in a car so that it will have a custom bucket seat that I want so I can sit comfortably in a car. But no place will do it because they think they're going to be liable or something.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You're changing the design of one of the safety features in the car, and that's the problem. If you change the design and we follow your plans and we mount the seat in there, and then sometime later you get rear-ended, the seat collapses, and because of that your head goes over the back of the seat and your worst-case scenario, you're dead, and then all your descendants decide that the shop should pay for that because the seat came loose. Is there any way you can adapt the seat to the existing bolts that are in the floor?
No. Well, most of them, they have seat rails. So they take the seat rails right off the floorboard. And then, you know, so I can understand. But, like, what about all these car builders? Like, when you watch all these car shows on cable TV, you know, and they tear out the floorboard and they weld in a whole new floorboard and Chip Goose and all these guys. When the person drives off in that car, aren't they liable for anything that happens to the person?
Absolutely, but I would imagine that they've got some kind of a legal document that says you're buying this car as is, you accept full responsibility, you're well aware that we built this and we're doing the best we can. But keep in mind, those cars you're talking about on TV, they don't go from Phoenix to Tombstone. Those cars are show cars. Those cars live their entire life in the kitchen or the living room of somebody's house. And they might come out once a year just to, let's run the motor and make sure it's okay. So most of those cars aren't going to be daily drivers. Don't you want this seat to adjust?
Well, I mean, somewhat. But most of them, like Recaro seats and all this, they have to, like, make a separate bracket and stuff from, like, the factory bucket when they take out the factory bucket seat. You know?
Right.
And then I guess it's all the way it's anchored to the rails or something that's like.
Yeah, I saw somebody not too long ago put an aluminum plate over the four bolts, and it would still slide. And then they bolted the seat to the aluminum plate. And they were able to adapt above those rails, though, as you clearly know. And I don't know that you need a big square piece. You just need a piece of aluminum that's probably 3/8 of an inch thick or thereabouts. But one of the things that you could do is you could find somebody that you want to do it, and you go to your attorney and have them draw up a hold harmless agreement. Then you give it to the shop and you say, run this by your legal counsel. So if your attorney agrees and our attorney agrees, then we're probably going to go ahead and do it. But our insurance company doesn't want to be a part of that agreement because they're going to have to pay if your descendants decide to sue us because you died. And if they can't find or they find their copy of it or if they pretend they don't find their copy of it, then it throws. Really and truly, this might be an overreach for my industry to do that. But most of us have put tires and wheels on cars that fell off and that weren't appropriate. And we ended up buying, our insurance company ended up buying somebody, you know, some road rash or worse yet, a car. So there is a risk, and the reward isn't big enough for many shops to involve themselves in the risk. So risk and reward is where it's at. Gosh darn it. Why don't you send me an email? Oh, no, I tell you what I want you to do. Call Tom Blackwell. He does that kind of stuff. He probably has insurance to cover himself for it. Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. He fabricates stuff for those hot rod cars. He's kind of like that those guys that build cars. He kind of does that. So I would take the seat with you, and I would set up a meeting with him, and then I say, this seat needs to go there. Is that something you can do? Will you accept?
Good.
And I'll give you a hold harmless agreement. I'll have my attorney, and I'll give it to your attorney, and they can work about the words. And once they both agree, then I'll sign it for you, and we're done. That's what I would do.
All right.
Okay?
Thanks, Mark.
All right, you bet. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We're going to take a break in about 10 seconds, and then we'll be back right after this. Lines are wide open. You're welcome to give us a call. And here, ladies, you can call us, and this is how you get by. You say, my husband says, or you say, my husband described this. Always blame it on your husband. Always blame it on your husband. It's not that women normally do that. It just takes the heat off of you. So you just, my husband says that driving 130 miles an hour doesn't hurt the car. And then we'll talk about it or something like that. 602-508-0960. When it comes to car repair, there's a couple of hints. I wish I had it here in front of me, and I'm going to look at my phone to see if I still have it. Here's the deal. I saw a, and excuse me while I'm dialing and talking to you because I'm going to look at my messages a guy sends me this, okay? This is from one of the big dealerships here in town. And I'm not going to paint all of them in one brush, okay? This is what he gets. This is also the best time to make sure everything is up to par with your car. I'm not going to name the brand. Other owners of vehicles similar in mileage and age to yours, take advantage of the following recommended service items list below. Okay, scheduled maintenance. I agree. If the manual says that this many miles or this many years, you should replace your brake fluid, I agree. Transmission service. I agree, as long as we're using the manual. Too many guys still think it's okay to sell you a service at $30,000 when the book calls for $100,000, and it's got synthetic fluid in it, and it'll go $100,000. But if they say at 30 that the fluid's brown, then yes, it needs to be flushed. But there has to be a reason why it was brown, and maybe you're hauling a trailer much bigger than your truck is designed to. So there's those kinds of back and forth. All right, scheduled maintenance, transmission service, I got that. Fuel injector cleaner. I say you got symptoms, and fuel injection cleaner will fix it, then knock yourself out. But to think that your car is going to love you more or your injectors are going to last longer if you flush them on a regular basis is flat-out bull excrement. That's all there is to it. Now, here's the one that an AC service, again, you do it when you need it. Here's the one that bothers me, really wads up my underwear. It says fuel injector or fuel tank cleaning. Fuel tank cleaning. Before I even try to explain that, let me explain what's going on. Ever since I've been in the car repair business and since 1968, we've had pretty much the same kind of maintenance stopping points. So we did, you know, oil changes at 3, and we usually did something at 30 and 60 and 90. So that's the way it's been for a very long time, 30, 60, 90. The newer model cars, certainly for the last 10 years, are now starting, their full service stopping points start at 90. And with the exception of tire rotations and oil changes, you really don't step up to the big dog repair bills until 90. Now you can imagine what that does to our industry. It eliminates a considerable amount of income. So you have to come out with something. So many shops and many dealers, I'm walking this fine line, have decided to come up with their own ideas of what you need, and Mark uses this word, to make your car love you and last forever, what you need to do, and this is the amount, and this is what we're going to do. This is just called filler. We're just trying to sell you something that we made up that's not in your owner's manual. Here's the deal. If your owner's manual says that you should clean the fuel tank, I personally will give the first three people $100 apiece. And I have to see it. You have to bring it to the shop. You have to show it to me. I need to see the owner's manual that says that if this, I don't care what mileage, I don't care what the date is, I don't care. If one of the line items says fuel tank cleaning, I'll give you $100. I've already done my homework. It doesn't appear. The idea of this kind of sales, as you can tell, kind of disturbs me. We don't need to make up stuff. The power steering fluid. If it's red and cherry, it's fine. If it's dark and brown, it needs to be flushed. If your brake fluid needs to be flushed, color has nothing to do with it. We look at moisture content. If it's above the limit, we flush the brake fluid. If it's not, we don't. Now, if we're going to do major work on your brake system and we're going to open up the fluids, then yes, let's flush it while we have it open. If we're going to open and drain all the stuff, then let's put new stuff in and let's flush it good. That makes sense, right? So when you look at a lot, fuel tank cleaning. Mark, and this is how you have to form your question to Mark. Mark, how many cars do you have? I said there's 38 cars in our fleet. That includes all the management cars, my daughter's car, my son's cars, all of Mark's stupid garage or his excavators and his Bobcat and all this equipment Mark dad has. Have you ever flushed the tank? No. Have you ever seen symptoms that flushing the tank would fix? No. Are there any symptoms when your tank is dirty? No. No, no, no. The idea is this is a crazy idea. Flushing your fuel injectors is a crazy idea. There is no benefit to that. You can flush your injectors as much as you want, and your injectors don't care. Most of the time, they fail electronically. And so you can flush them until the cows come home, and your injector's not going to love you. Because this is what it's all about. It's your car's going to last forever, and your car's going to love you if you do this. So one of the self-defense for car expense things I have to offer you is when you're presented with this giant list of all this stuff, we need to clean your and lube your windshield, your electric antenna, and we need to blow the moisture out of your taillight lenses. You just say, let's just do this. Just because, oh, my husband's a crazy guy about this. Or if you're a husband, you say, I'm kind of a fanatic about this. Pull the owner's manual out, and would you show me in the owner's manual where it says anything about flushing your tank? And I would be happy to consider it if you could show me. They'll never do it. They'll come up with an excuse. They'll tell you that they don't know where it's at in the book because it's not there. And the owner's manual is written for your car, no matter if it's born and raised in Arizona or if it's in Alaska or if it's in North Dakota where it gets really cold or the Northeast that gets really cold. That manual doesn't say except. That manual is for every car of that year, make, and model. That manual doesn't distinguish between Minnesota minus 30 and Arizona positive 120. It doesn't distinguish that. And if it did, they'd have a manual for Arizona and North Dakota. So if they tell you that your manual's not written for the state, then you look them in the eye and you say, I'll tell you what, why don't you order me that Arizona manual for my car? And that's just like poking them in the eye. So these are the self-defense for car expense stuff. And you know what? There's lots of us out there that play by the rules. There's lots of us out there that don't play those silly games. But if we do, not silly games, but if you need a power steering flush, we're going to show you why. Here's your fluid, and here's the new fluid. Make your mind up. Decide for yourself what you want to do. But the fluid is clearly dirty and may have burnt, and the brand new fluid looks like cherry soda pop that's been diluted. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, 602-508-0960. Kurt's Auto Repair is up at I-17 and Bell. All the shops on my best car repair shops list, marksalem.com, are a step ahead and quite a bit above many of the shops that I'm aware of as well. Kurtz, Eric, and Jeff are three great technicians, and they have the tenacity and the knowledge to track down a difficult particular problem. But they do oil changes all the way up to engine swaps as well. So if you live near I-17 and Bell, may I suggest that you try Kurtz? If you get taken care of by Kurt, Jeff, or Eric, you've got the very best they have to offer. Let's go to the phones real quick, and Shawnee, you're up first. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. So my husband and I listen to you every Saturday morning and love your show.
Thank you. Thank you.
But I want to say my husband always says that I drive too aggressively and brake too hard. And I'm one of the people that follow my owner's manual, get my oil changed, replace my tires. And how can I get him to tell me to stop braking too hard?
Oh gosh. Change the question. Mark, when you talk to the majority of the people that, that do business with you, do you tell them to back off the brakes and drive like you got a hot cup of coffee that's full, a full hot cup of coffee between your knees? Do you say that, Mark? No, I don't. Mark, if you don't say that, is there a middle or is there an extreme? And I say, listen, I'm a cowboy. You put a horse in the stall or in a pasture, and he never runs, and he walks around, he's going to be crippled up in no time, and he's going to hate you. But if you put a horse in the pasture and you ride him on a regular basis, and you put him through the paces, and sometimes he's walking and sometimes he's chasing a cow down at a cow down at a full gallop, the answer to your question is you need to drive that like you stole it, because it would like you much better than driving around as if you got a full cup of coffee on the dashboard or anywhere else. Drive it like you stole it. Now, you got to compare your brakes with his brakes. And both of you should be in the 25 to 40,000 miles, and it will depend on who has more highway than city. We typically see front brakes. Now, front brakes will go, and you'll do two sets of fronts for one rears. That's typically. But Mark drives his like he stole it. My wife drives her like she's running from the police. My daughters are the same way. Because your car likes varying throttle, and it likes to see the RPM range. It does not like to see you try to keep the tack needle at 2,000 RPMs for its whole life. So, that's my answer, and you owe me big money for just saying all that. So make a donation at the church the next time that you double whatever you're going to put in the pot or put in the, what do they call that?
The plate.
The plate. Whatever you're going to put in the plate, double it. But listen, you made me laugh. That's a great question. I don't get that very well. But I'm telling you exactly the truth. I'm telling you exactly.
Drive it like I stole it.
That drive it like you stole it. And you know what? That's the symptom sometimes. We have little old ladies that will bring their cars in. And we'll look at them and we know that they're not. So we'll give it to one of our senior techs. And this is what we do. We go down to the freeway and we get on the on-ramp. But we kind of time it to where there's nobody on the on-ramp. And we nail that SOB as hard as we can. And we don't let it go until we're at the bottom of the ramp. You look in your rearview mirror, it looks like you're driving a James Bond car. The carbon and the trash that's coming out of the tailpipe, nobody wants to follow you anyway. So you get off, and then you get on at Elliott Road, and you do the same thing. And you get off on Baseline Road, and you do the same thing. And then all of a sudden you drive it back, and it idles and purrs like a kitten. And you go, okay, here you go. What do I owe you? $10. I went and ran the hell out of your car. That happens. That happens 2, 3, 4 times a year, I promise you. All righty, I'm going because your husband already hates me, Shauna. All righty, we're going to go to Bruce. Bruce, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I got a question. About 5 years ago, I bought a CJ5, a 1970, pretty original. I think it's a 232. V6. It started, ran, and moved back when I bought it, and I kind of bought it for a project vehicle anyway. So it's been sitting next to my shop for 5 years, and I'm finally getting to it. I want to start getting the motor running and stuff on it. So I was just wanting some information from you as far as what should I start as far as the entire it's been sitting for 5 years, hasn't been turned over or anything. Is there anything I need to do before I start trying to turn it over and start it?
No. Because it isn't going to start at the beginning anyway. So you're going to crank it over. It's going to build oil pressure. It's going to oil everything up. You can put oil in the cylinders, and you can go to all that trouble, and it's a waste of time. Here's the deal.
Okay.
I want all the old fuel out, clean fuel. Maybe 10 gallons of clean fuel. I want you to pull a spark plug or pull the coil wire on it, crank it over, and make sure you have spark. Okay, so when you turn it over, it goes tick, 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 tick. Okay? Now we got spark and we got fuel. You're going to take a can of carburetor spray, and you're going to have a fire extinguisher close by, and somebody's going to crank it over, and you're going to go tss, 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 and you're going to get it running. And once he gets it running, you're going to have to go tss, 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 tss. But you want to get it running and have him bring the have your wife or somebody bring the RPMs up a little bit. Between 1,000 and 2,000. Then pretty soon you're going to stop, and the motor's going to be hold. It's going to hold. Well, now you know the fuel pump works. Now you know it runs on its own fuel. So you air up the tires. I'd go take it for a mile jaunt. I wouldn't drive it like I stole it right now, but I'd take it for a jaunt, come back and drain the oil when it's hot. And then I'd let it sit there for an hour, and then I'd put clean oil in it, and then I'd start driving it. I would drive it cautiously and wait till you get 1,000 miles on it, then you can drive it like you stole it. That makes sense?
Okay.
Spark fuel, auxiliary fuel, because you're not going to you'll crank it for a long time unless you artificially inseminate the motor with fuel.
Okay.
And then after you put 1,000 miles on it, then you're probably going to want to drain the transmission, the transfer case, and both differentials, put some new fluid in those. And as long as it turns, it stops, and it starts, then start using it. Don't let your grandson drive it, though. All righty? All righty.
Thank you, Bruce.
You bet. I want to take a break, but, John, you're going to be my first caller. I think Gil's got about a 3.5 minute, maybe 4 minute break, so we'll be back to John and anybody else, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. John, I'm going to get to you, but I got to do this first. Blackwell Auto, you hear me talk about him at 40th and Greenway. Tom is a special kind of guy. If I wasn't doing this show, you wouldn't know the difference because he talks like I do. Tom is a really good guy. He knows lots about old hot rods. He can fabricate things. He can build things. He can do fancy stuff. But on the repair side, he does everything that everybody else does. So if you're in that area, 40th and Greenway, or in the North Scottsdale area, that's the closest, best shop you've got, according to Mark Salem. John, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I got a 2010 Lexus ES350, and I have a front-end vibration on acceleration.
Okay, now where do you feel it? In the steering wheel or in the seat of your pants?
In the seat of the pants. Now, I thought maybe it was a balance issue, so I had the tires checked and rotated. No difference, and then I read it could be a motor mount. So I checked them, and one looked bad. I replaced it, and it fixed it for a little while, and then it came back and read I should replace all of them, and I did that. Seemed all right for about 10 miles, and then the vibration came back, but not quite as violent.
Okay.
So
I agree with all the motor mounts, depending on how many miles you've got on this Lexus.
I got about 140,000.
Okay, yeah. You do all of them at the same time. But is this a vibration that when you're in drive and you're sitting at a traffic light you feel?
No.
Okay.
It's only on acceleration. As soon as you let off, the vibration's gone.
Okay. This can be something really weird. We had an El Camino the other day that had this same problem. And we figured out that the air conditioning hose had been mounted to the fender, but the grommet that's supposed to surround this metal hose was gone. So that metal hose was vibrating on the fender. So we put our smallest technician underneath the hood and we went and drove the car. And he says this bracket. So we take it off. We put a piece of heater hose around it. We put it back on, and the thing's gone. This could be something really weird. You need to have somebody track it down. Now, if you want to do the fix, that's fine. But you need to have somebody track it down for you. You've already spent a whole lot more money than anybody's going to charge you to diagnose this. You've probably spent twice the money that somebody's going to charge you to diagnose it. But if you can duplicate it, and it sounds like you can, then not on Monday morning or Friday afternoon for obvious reasons. Find somebody in your neighborhood that will go take a ride with you. First, I want to drive and teach you how to do it. Then I want you to drive so you can make sure you can duplicate it. Then, how much is your diagnostic fee? They'll probably give you a range, 50 to 100, 75 to 125, or it could be 35 to 75, whatever. And you say, okay, well, call me and let me know what you find. And that's how I would handle it. So I would think that the diagnostic money would be the best get. But this is a very unusual thing, what you're describing. So the repair is going to be somewhat unusual as well. So we don't normally get, now, unless you're misinterpreting an engine miss, or we got the air conditioning cycling on and off. I mean, there's lots of other things.
It doesn't matter if the AC is on or not. Okay. It's just, it feels like the wheels are coming off, but everything's all good on that.
Okay.
It's just...
All right. Well, the wheels coming off have a, I mean, that's a completely different, that's four square wheels, and the vibration gets worse the faster you go and all that other kind of stuff. So I consider that when you said.
This is just only during acceleration.
Okay.
So as soon as you let off, it's fine.
Okay. Why don't you manually shift the transmission, pull it down into low and shift it and see what happens if it goes away then. Okay, well, I've guessed all I can guess, and that's all I can do. You have an explanation for everything we've talked about, but you haven't fixed the car either, and so I'm just throwing stuff out there that a professional like myself would probably go do, but we wouldn't have. I mean, balancing the tires is crazy because this isn't a balance problem. To be honest with you, motor mounts cause a problem at idle worse than any other place. And if it's in drive, there's a vibration, it's the load mount. If it's in reverse, then it's the unload mount. It's usually the back mount. So, you know, motor mounts don't even do what you talked about. So I got to move on, but good luck to you. Len, you're up next. How can I talk to you, or how can I help you, Len?
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Do you recommend that any kind of cooling system additive to prevent this, that, or the other thing?
No. No. That's a great, okay. That's a great profit center. You know what, Len? We just cleaned up your cooling system, and you know coolant works well. But I'd like to put this water pump lubricant in there, and the water pump lubricant also has a rust inhibitor. And Len, this is something that really is going to pay dividends down the road. And Len says, "Well, you know how much is that?" And he goes, "Well, a bottle of it is $59.95." And Len's either going to say yes or no, but that bottle cost me $16. And everybody charges a whole lot more than $16. But in reality, how many of you people, you weren't born yesterday, I can tell by your voice. So you're probably my age. My idea is, how many people have you known that had a water pump fail because the lubricity was missing? Why does a water pump need the lubricant? Because the coolant provides the lubricant. We're cooling the bearings off with coolant. So to answer your question, is I don't sell them, and I don't use them.
Any kind of a rust inhibitor at all?
Nope. Now, if you put coolant in and it turns red on you, it's because the radiator's dirty and it's got a bunch of red silt in it. You can put all the additives you want in there. You're better off to take the radiator out and take it down to the local quarter car wash and stick that nozzle in there and try to blow out. But all that stuff's going to be at the bottom of the radiator, too, and that's the hardest part to get out. So, I mean, if you changed it as many times as possible, you'd probably make some progress. But once we get that red rust inside the radiator, it ain't coming out. But it doesn't cause any problems. It's not going to cause any problems. So it's kind of like a symptom that doesn't really need any action. So that's my opinion. But if it makes you feel good and you say that'll give me some comfort, I wouldn't disagree. You're spending your money, not mine. But my personal opinion is there factual data to back up some kind of a coolant additive? And the answer is no. All the coolant makers make it based on manufacturer specifications. Lexus and Chevrolet and Ford and Honda and Toyota, they all give specifications. They say, this is what I need to make this car last a long time. So any additive it's kind of like, you know, you brush your teeth, and then after you swirl it with mouthwash, and then after that you get the vibration toothpaste, and you do that again. Okay, well, if you want to do all three of those, that's okay, but I'm not quite sure that that's going to be a real benefit. But anyway, Len, thank you very much for that. That was a good question. You might find people that disagree with me, and that's okay, but you ask me, not them. Blackwell, we talked about Blackwell, but automatic transmission exchange is in Phoenix. If you've gone up and down Washington, you've seen them on the north side of 40th Street in Washington. Phil's been in business since 1968. So if you're in Phoenix and you have a transmission problem, you've got a problem with how it drives, how it shifts, a vibration, or maybe it's missing high gear or something like that, then I would take it over to Automatic Transmission Exchange. I would say to them, I can demonstrate my problem. Do you have somebody that I can take a ride? I'll have him back in 10 or 15 minutes, and I can make it happen. And then I would like him to drive and make sure he can make it happen. Then I'll leave it here and you can give me an estimate. So Automatic Transmission Exchange is a great place. And like I said, Phil's been around since 1968. And I'll tell you a secret. Phil was around when Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble first bought those cars with steel wheels. That's how old he's been. So Mike. I got Mike. Mike, how can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I got a 2006 Kia Spectra. It's got about 130,000 miles on it. And my speedometer is working intermittently. Like in the morning when I go to work, it works fine. After driving about 15, 20 minutes, it stops working.
Okay.
Every day.
It's going to be one or two, one. I'm going to guess that you have an electronic speed, a speedometer. I'm going to guess there's no cable. I'll touch both of them.
Right.
If you have an electronic speed sensor on your transmission, then certainly we would go down there and test that, look at it, and that would be the cheaper of the other possibility, which is a dashboard or a printed circuit or something like that. So if you have an electronic speed sensor, a good guess would be let's replace that first. Now, when you pull it out, let's make sure the gear isn't stripped. Let's make sure that the speed sensor is not locked up. Let's make sure it spins freely or doesn't any one of those points. So we need to kind of look at the old speed sensor, plug it in, and then say, well, here you go, Mike. Let's see how successful. Now, I will tell people to guess. I'm going to tell them I'm not paying for the guess. You are. You got two choices. Wait till it gets worse and just breaks, and then it'll be really easy to find. Or if you want to make an educated guess, a speed sensor, the labor, the shop supplies, environmental charges, and sales tax. Now, if it's got a cable, it's going to be the head, which is called the speedometer head, and that could be on the electric side as well. Or it's going to be the cable that's bound up, the cable that's not been greased in 100,000 miles, a cable that's going to, when you pull it out, it's going to have some real hard spots in it, like a snake that swallowed a big mouse. That's kind of what it'll look like. There'll be big bumps in the cable. You take it out, you clean it up real good with a carburetor cleaner, you put some white lube on it, you put it back in, and that usually solves the problem. But a cable wouldn't come and go. It would make the needle jerky, but I don't know.
Yeah, even sometimes when I'm sitting at idle, it'll bounce up to like 60 miles an hour and bounce back down.
Okay, I want you to try this. When you're sitting there at idle, I want you to hit the top of the dash as if you're just killing a fly. So like this. See if you can make it happen. If you jar, and I don't want you to hit the dash hard enough to crack the vinyl. Take your hand and slap it hard. See if you can make it happen, because if you can make it go on and go off, then you have a bad connection up there behind the dash.
Okay.
So that's what we have.
In the cluster.
In the cluster, yes, in the cluster.
Okay.
All righty?
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
You betcha. I'm going to put down Speedo Intermittent, because I keep track of all my callers. And, we have another one, Gil says. Who's on the phone?
We have Tom.
Tom, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Hey, I downsized and bought a little mini mag, and the salesman, you know how they try to tack on extra warranties and stuff?
Uh-huh.
And because of all the electronics, do they mess up that much, or is that just they just want to try to upsell you?
That's scary, isn't it?
Buy-in.
It's scary, though, isn't it? It's scary. That's scary.
Yes, it is scary.
But when you start talking about the electronics of a car, those are thousands and thousands of dollars. Now, every new car has, we've gone from mechanical to virtually 100% of electrical. I can name 20 things off the top of my head that could go bad that's going to make this warranty just look small. So, you know, you could have a dashboard cluster go out. That could be $800. And then my response would be, shut the hell up. When was the last time I did a cluster? I might do one a year. When was the last time I had an electrical malfunction that's going to cost the cost of that aftermarket warranty? And you're going to buy it when it's new, and you're not going to really be able to use it till it's 2 or 3 years old because your factory warranty covers. So they get to use your money for the first 2 or 3 years, and you're not ever going to use any. Then when you get to the time where your aftermarket warranty is over, then this happens. I tell this story all the time. Lady brings her car in, and the radiator's bad. And she has aftermarket warranty for the radiator, the cooling system. So we call him up, and we say the radiator's bad. And this guy on the other end of the line says, well, send me your maintenance records. And I said, okay. So I sent him all the maintenance records. He goes, oh, we aren't going to cover it. I said, why not? And he goes, well, she didn't have her transmission service done at 65. I said, no, this is the radiator, the cooling system radiator. He goes, well, the transmission fluid goes through there. And I said, yeah, there is a cooler, but the transmission fluid goes into the cooler and back to the transmission. We don't have any problem with that. This has got a header leak on it. The top of the radiator has a leak on the driver's side, and the cooling system for the transmission is on the passenger side. Nope, she didn't. So you're going to void her warranty and deny her claim because a completely unrelated maintenance was missed. Yep. Oh, Mr. Salem, we want to send you the part. Well, what country is it coming from? Well, we don't know. Who's going to warranty that? You are. No, I'm not, because I didn't make a dime on it. You're sending the part, and you want me to install. Now, I got this BMW on the rack. When am I going to get it? When, the next 3 days? Well, who's going to pay for my inability to use that rack now that I've taken the rack and pinion off, but it's up on the hoist? And so who's going to pay for the time for 3 days, because I can't roll it out because it has no steering? And that's because you told me to take the rack out and look at it. That's the kind of problems I have. So you can do whatever you want with your money, but I want to tell you something. I've never met anybody in my whole life that raised their hand and say, I got the better of the end of the deal from an aftermarket warranty. Never.
Yeah. And another thing they added on also was, because this is Arizona and we get off these haboobs and dust storms, and that will fry everything, they claim. Oh. So that's another stuff.
That's a lie. That's a lie. That's a lie. That's haboobs don't cause electrical malfunctions. A haboob pits your windshield. Oh, God, you got my heart racing. Anyway, I got 20 seconds. Thank you for calling. Thank you all for making the show a success. God bless you. My email is mark@marksalem.com. So if I didn't cover something, you want to do it, mark@marksalem.com. Drive nice. And when somebody does something nice, stick your arm out the window, say thank you.